Hey, everybody, it's Michael Steele. Welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. This one's a little bit different for me. It's a much more sobering time and sobering conversation I want to have today with my guest. I deliberately took a beat before putting anything out on the shooting in Uvalde, Texas. Were 19 babies, 19 fourth graders, third and fourth graders were killed, two teachers. Because I wanted to get a sense of where America was on this. So here we are a week later and wanting to spend a little bit of time sort of digging into the culture and the thinking behind gun ownership. The resistance to doing anything about AR-15s and mass shootings. So I thought I'd call on a friend who is no stranger to this discussion, as he has been a hardened advocate in the Second Amendment space, as a well-known talk show host, radio show host, former social worker, and former 2020 Republican presidential candidate who served in the United States House of Representatives. I got him elected in 2010 to Illinois' 8th Congressional District, none other than Joe Walsh. Joe is also the host of the very popular podcast, White Flag with Joe Walsh. And so I thought it was good to sort of take a moment to drill down a little bit and open up some old wounds in this space and have an honest conversation about it. So stay tuned with my conversation with Joe Walsh about Uvalde, the killing of the innocents, and the Second Amendment, right after this. Well, it's always a treat when I can have a conversation with my man, Joe Walsh. We've got good history together in the trenches, in politics. And this Joe, is much more somber moment conversation that we're about to have. I, to be honest, I deliberately didn't put anything out last week when the shootings occurred in Uvalde a week ago today. And partly because just the being stunned by the whole thing and thinking to myself, damn it, here we go again. But also I wanted to get some feeling, some gauge of the nation's reaction to all of this. What's its true response is going to be? And I have to tell you, man, I have been very surprised, pleasantly so, that there's the truth to the phrase that's been floating around, that this time is different. It feels different, even from Sandy Hook, which was devastating. Do you have that same sense right now, that this is somehow a little bit different?
I do, Michael. And first off, Mr. Chairman, it's always a pleasure to sit with you, because I would not have been sent to Congress back in 2010 without your help.
Appreciate it, bro.
I've had a lot of private conversations this week with Republicans, as I'm sure you have. And I've heard in their voices fear, concern, and uh-oh, we better do something like I've not heard before.
Right.
I don't know if that will lead to anything, but there's certainly privately, Michael, among, let's be clear, it's Senate Republicans, man.
Senate Republicans, yeah. Yeah,
I just hear a wee little something different.
Yeah, it's that something different. I don't know how it's going to manifest itself just yet. We'll get to that in a moment. I have some thoughts on that. I'm sure you do too. But there is something that's palpable about this moment. And what's made it that much more palpable are, I'll be honest, folks like you. It is no secret that you are a card-carrying honorary originator of the Second Amendment and supporter. But you tweeted out something last week that I thought was profound, so profound that it moved me to act, to respond to your efforts. You put out a tweet in response to someone who had tweeted something, and you said, why do you delete it? I stand by what I said. I feel way better about America after having spoken with David Hogg. And David Hogg is one of the survivors of Stoneman Douglas high school shooting in Florida.
Yep. Yep.
Though we disagree on stuff, David is a committed and passionate advocate. He's a leader. We need lots more like him. I'm proud to work with him to try and find solutions here. And that moved me. And I think it touched a lot of people. In fact, it moved me to the point where I responded to you saying, hey, yep. Yo, Wall's freedom, right? Yep. You and I have been in the trenches together since your run for Congress in 2010. David Hogg and I have recounted on numerous occasions your leadership as an example of how change happens. Count on my help. I want to be a part of that conversation. And it is amazing that this moment have pulled two stalwart conservatives like you and myself.
Yep.
Into the space to team up with someone like David. I'm following your lead on this. What does that say about this moment? Is that part of this something different? This feels somehow different?
Yeah, so Michael, last Tuesday was a pretty weird day. About a month and a half ago, David Hogg, as you said, Parkland, Florida, mass school shooting survivor 4 years ago, sent out a tweet saying, I want to have a conversation with somebody who disagrees with me about guns.
Right.
I said, David, I'm here. So we actually sat down the morning of the horrible massacre at Uvalde.
Wow.
And we had a conversation, Michael, for my podcast before Uvalde hit. And it was an amazing conversation. We disagreed on most things when it comes to guns and reform, but we found some common ground. And I left that meeting with him just sky high with hope, because let's be real. You've been very nice to me here, but let's be real. People have called me a crazy gun nut. I have been sometimes idiotically overly strident in my support of gun rights. I've said plenty of things over the years that have gotten me in trouble. And then Uvalde hits and we all grieve. But Michael, because David Hogg and I have been working together, I think to myself, if a crazy outspoken gun guy like me can find common ground with a school shooting survivor like David Hogg and actually try to move some reform, then I don't see why or how Senate Republicans can't sit at the table.
So so a couple of things on that. One, I agree with you, which is why I want to team up with you and work with you on this effort.
And by the way, Mr. Chairman, kudos to you for reaching out to David as well.
Yeah, no, I was taken by, because I know where you are on the Second Amendment. I you know, as you said, we go back to our campaigns early on. And so I know that if someone who has been very strong, strident at times, as you said, on this issue, recognizes this moment for what it is, then the rest of us should. Now, I've not been as strong an advocate as you. I'm a strong supporter, but not a strong advocate as you've been in the past on the Second Amendment. But again, I think it's important as a former national chairman, elected official in this space to stand with a fellow conservative and say, yeah, let's move the needle on this thing. My heart was broken, and I've been in this space to want to make change for a long time. I recount the story that when I ran for RNC chairman, there's this long line of people running against me. And so we were all at this on this dais, right? And I'm sitting on the far right end here, and then everything to my left. And the Second Amendment question comes up, and these guys are falling all over themselves. Man, I'm telling you, they are falling all over themselves. to prove how pro Second Amendment they are.
Yep.
They're bragging about the number of weapons they own, the kind of weapons they own, how often they go shooting, like, you know, almost like the commercials, sort of foretelling the commercials you now would see people cocking the gun and talking I'm rough. They get to me and I go, don't own a gun, don't have a permit for one, don't have a license, strong support of the Second Amendment, but I can't identify with any of that. And it was, I just stood out in such stark contrast. But that's what this moment is calling for, people who are in a different space to come around this moment. Here's the problem I cynically deduce.
Yeah.
That the move to your point about the second, about the Senate, I'm looking at the clock. I know Mitch McConnell well. Mitch McConnell's looking at the clock. Mitch McConnell doesn't want to have this issue on the agenda going into November. He doesn't want to talk about this issue. I do not think that there's going to be any meaningful proposition or proposal for gun changes, gun reform, before the November elections.
Yeah.
So part of this to me, as I've pieced together again from those conversations, has been a little bit of a stalling tactic. Okay, we'll send Cornyn over to go talk with the Democrats. And we got 4th of July break coming up. We got the summer recess coming up. Then we're going to be in the November. Nobody's going to want to, September, because nobody's going to want to come back and spend a lot of time because they're going to campaign. Am I being just too cynical, Joe? Or is this, do you see something from your conversations that say that there's a working group of 10 senators who will say yes to background checks or yes to red flag laws or whatever?
I wish I could, Michael, but I will say this, you're probably right. No lie, no bullshit. You are probably right. Now, you and I may disagree. You and I probably disagree on certain gun reform measures. I think the sweet spot, if you want to do something, is this notion of focusing like a laser beam on reforming before a gun is purchased, like doing everything under our power to make sure a guy who shouldn't have a gun doesn't get a gun. That should be easy, right? 10 Republicans in the Senate.
Easy to do that.
Right. But I agree with you. It probably won't happen. So here's what I think needs to happen. I left the NRA about 5 years ago. Screw the NRA. It's a corrupt organization that Michael doesn't even want people like you and me talking about minimum reform. So I think what's developing is, I doubt something will happen by this November, but I'm part of a growing movement of responsible gun owners who are prepared to say screw you to the NRA and present some sort of lobbying interest over these next few years, again, on these Senate Republicans.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And again, count me in on anything I can do in tandem with you. You and I know all these players, and I'm happy to be any room you want me to be in or any call you want me to be on to help back up your efforts. I'll just tell you now, because of just how crazy things have gotten over the last few years, you know, some of us have had to, you know, reevaluate, you know, now I've gone out and I've gotten a license, don't have a gun yet, but I have a license because it's just crazy. I've got a family. My wife is a lot of times by herself. And you know, so I see now so much more of the 360 of this issue.
By the way, Michael, can I jump in real quick?
Sure.
Cause I want everybody to understand what Michael Steele just said. If you are a Joe Walsh or a Michael Steele and you publicly oppose Trump and Trumpism, you put up with threats on a regular basis. And I don't, Michael, I just didn't want you to skirt by that because people need to hear that. That's something daily that you and I live with.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it causes a reevaluation. Like I said, I've for 90% of my adult life, I've been in the space of totally behind the Second Amendment, guided support those, responsible gun ownership, do not want the government to overreach in this area, et cetera. But, you know, watching friends and watching my own family having to deal with this threats, I get and understand that appreciation even more so now for the idea of responsible gun ownership, responsible measures to protect those law-abiding citizens from bad actors who have access to guns. So that to me is a very, very important part of the conversation.
Yep.
And to your, and to the point you were just making about what the Senate will likely fail to do, let me just share with you a publication from NPR that came out just yesterday.
Okay.
Since last Tuesday, we have had at least 8 mass shootings across the country. Wednesday, May 25th in Philadelphia, a man riding a mountain bike opened fire on a home where a young man and his date were preparing to leave for the prom, right?
Yeah.
Police said the gunman shot a 19-year-old man, a young woman, also 19, and the woman's 34-year-old mother and 60-year-old and a 60-year-old man. Friday, May 27th, 6 people were shot at a graduation party in Alabama, right? Saturday, May 28th in Chattanooga, Tennessee, 6 people were shot a block away from the Tennessee Aquarium, right? ABC 30 in California reported 3 teenagers were wounded and 1 man killed in a shooting in Fresno Saturday night. Colorado Springs, this is all on the 28th. Colorado Springs are investigating a shooting in a bar parking lot, killing 1 man, wounding 3 women. Shots broke out at a house party in Malabar, Florida, Saturday night, striking 4 people between 15 and 18. Just this past Sunday, Fox 32 in Illinois, 5 people remain in serious condition after they were shot in Chicago's West Garfield Park. You've got this I don't understand, dude. I mean, since the killing of 19 children and two teachers, we've had 45 people injured, 8 people killed in the 5 days since that. Where does this country, when do we really say to ourselves, this gun culture is too much to bear? It's not, again, I didn't say anything about gun ownership, this gun culture that we now see people going out and using this weapon to deal with their frustrations, their anger, to repay people pissed off about that. I don't know, how do you deal with it? I mean, so to a certain extent, David, you've got people saying, well, write me the law that's going to stop that.
And Michael, look, I don't think there is a law. Now, I think there are some things we can and should do. But man, you get an evil, sick, bad guy who wants to get his hands on a gun and do evil, sick, bad things. In a country of 400 million guns, it's impossible. It really is almost impossible to stop every one of these. But so the problem isn't just guns. Let's be honest, but the problem is guns. Guns, we've got a lot of guns. We have a gun culture, no doubt about it. We talk about things, Michael, like the AR-15.
Right.
I mean, 99.9% of all Americans out there who own a AR-15 are responsible, law-abiding gun owners, but there are some who are not. So there is no silver bullet, but again, I do think the focus should be on moving heaven and earth up front before a bad guy buys a gun to make sure that bad guy doesn't get a gun. I keep coming back to this because I'm not going to support banning certain firearms, but I will support doing everything up front. And I know that's where most gun owners are. I know they are.
I want to take a quick break, come back. I want to pick up on that point because I want to dig a little bit more into your thinking there. And I want to get into the psychology of gun ownership and the culture. We're talking with my buddy, Joe Walsh, former member of Congress, and someone who has not just reached across the aisle, but walked across the aisle to begin working with gun safety advocates like David Hogg. We'll follow up with Joe right after this.
We're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back right after this. The Sports Psychology Hour with Dr. Andrew Jacobs is a conversation about success in sports and life, coaching, youth sports, and so much more. Listen to athletes, coaches, parents, and just ordinary folks like you who want to achieve and have fun doing it. Now you can support the show at patreon.com/sportspsychologyhour. Get access to ad-free content and exclusive Patreon-only episodes. Just go to patreon.com/sportspsychologyhour. That's patreon.com/sportspsychologyhour.
Welcome back, everybody. Michael Steele Podcast. We're having a very insightful conversation with someone who I think brings a lot to the conversation in terms of gun laws in this country. As a former legislator, congressman who had to deal with this issue, and advocate, Joe Walsh. You were about to say, Joe? Go ahead.
And by the way, Michael, again, I want to say a kudos to you because you've had a huge influence on me. You may not remember, but when I launched my Don Quixote Mission Impossible primary challenge to Trump, you graciously invited me on your podcast. And when I was on your podcast, you very respectfully slapped me upside the head, and it was well-deserved because you and I have talked.
Yeah.
Tea Party outspoken guys like me over the years, we helped radicalize the Republican Party base, and now they're fully radicalized. I'm trying to do something about that. But this issue, Michael, of the gun issue, man, these folks I hear from every day, just when it comes to guns, they're off the charts radicalized.
Well, so that, and as we were going to break, that's what I wanted to get into, is this culture. Describe for me your understanding and appreciation for this gun culture. How did we go from forming a well-formed militia to I can own whatever weapon I want and use it anytime I want? It's complete absolute. Even Justice Scalia recognized that the Second Amendment was not absolute. In fact, there is no amendment to the Constitution or any article of the Constitution that is absolute. All of it should be conditioned upon, you know, circumstances, time, place, culture, all these things that change the way we operate and legislate and govern ourselves. Why are they so hardened on this one issue?
It's like their last line of defense. Michael, I'm a big time gun owner. I got a bunch of guns. I would never in my life think to post a picture of myself with my kids and all of my guns. Yet we've got Republican members of Congress who do shit like this.
Yeah.
Look, I believe in the Second Amendment. It's there. It's our ultimate line of defense against a tyrannical government and just for our own self-defense. I believe in that. But you're right. It's not absolute. But Michael, this party that you and I have loved ever since the age of Trump, it's no longer about being right or telling the truth. You just got to stick it to the opposition, stick it to the Dems. And they're doing the same thing with these guns. I think it's really influencing, again, Republican-based voters out there when they see Lauren Boebert and Thomas Massie bragging about the armament they have.
Yeah. So let's peel that onion back a little bit more because do we really need to push this idea that, you know, a tyrannical government. There are other governments around the globe. There are other societies and cultures around the globe that have gun ownership. They have gun owners, Australia, you know, Europe, places like that. So this idea that we are somehow, you know, warding ourselves against some tyrannical government, what is the expectation that people take away from this right? I mean, I don't understand this idea that somehow now we're warding ourselves off from a tyrannical government. But that was not what that was about the states being able to form a militia at a time it needed to defend itself against England. not giving citizens the right to arm themselves against the emerging federal government of the United States.
You and I, Mr. Chairman, my friend, could have a really lively discussion about the Second Amendment, because I beg to differ a little bit with you. I really
okay,
do.
Okay, no, this is what I want to know.
Because again, I've read, as I know you have, I've read so much about it, and
I mean, because it just, so I just said it for the audience, I was pulling it up. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, my interpretation of that is, in order to have that well-regulated militia, you needed to arm the people, right? To be a part of that militia.
By the way, Michael, it was understood on both sides, because the Bill of Rights, every one of those amendments was a compromise to get the Constitution passed.
Correct.
Both sides understood that the American people were armed and that wasn't going to change.
Right. All right. So where do we go wrong in our further interpretation of that amendment that now includes a weapon like an AR-15?
Well, that's a good point, because at that time, Michael, and I do believe that the people back then did fear, oh my God, we want our own militias, and our own militias were made up of the people.
We did not, because to be clear,
we did not have a standing army.
We did not have a standing army. So this fledgling government had no military source to draw on to defend the country from the encroachment of Great Britain. So it looked to the 13 colonies, it looked to the emerging states, it looked to the farmers to arm themselves, because the Brits basically would write a law that says you couldn't own a weapon. So that was the response. Oh yeah, we can own a weapon here. That's how we'll defend ourselves. But now we seem to have gone so far afield of that it's not just one military branch, but like six different military branches, from the Marines to the Air Force.
At the time, we had the same weapons that the government had. We both had muskets. So that's out the window. But like up north of us in Canada, Trudeau just basically earlier today outlawed all handguns in Canada. And Trudeau said, you don't need a gun in Canada unless you're hunting or for sport. And the left down in America cheered that. Well, that could never stand in America.
Not
because people.
Yeah.
So there's another civil war. Yeah. But you make, Michael, you make good sense, because the Republican Party kind of radicalized this issue. We've always had a lot of guns, and it was always understood the American people were really well armed these last 200 and so years.
Right.
In the early 30s, we outlawed machine guns, automatic guns.
Yep.
And so now we've got these things, Michael, called semi-automatic guns. I mean, most handguns and long guns are all semi-automatic. One pull of the trigger and there it goes. And I just don't know, maybe you have an answer, I don't know how you get rid of these. And I don't know how you would ever ban them.
You don't. You can't. That's the problem.
So what do we do, Michael?
Well,
you
noted at the beginning, there are over 400 million
firearms.
Firearms. There are only 320 some million Americans, right?
Yes.
You know, I'm one of those Americans. I have a license to own a firearm. I don't own a firearm, right?
Yeah.
So if I ever want to go get one, I can go get one. But I don't own it. So that means somebody's got my gun and a whole lot of others, all right?
Yes.
I do not see the world in which any president or any Congress says, or even any constitutional amendment that has the way to make its way through, that would say that you are no longer allowed to own a weapon in the United States of
America.
I don't see how that happens. Yeah.
So, Michael,
the question is, where do we go? And this gets back to the culture question. We have created such a culture around guns.
Yeah.
such a lifestyle around guns, which you've alluded to, some of the idiots out there posing. I mean, I was looking at these, you know, I've got these conservatives talking about the left grooming their kids. I'm like, dude, you just showed me a picture of your 6-month-old holding a semi-automatic weapon. So talk about grooming, right?
Where
do we go here culturally? How do we get people to dial back their bullshit around weapons and apply a higher degree of common sense? I don't even care about, it's not about intelligence anymore. My mama said, I don't care. I know a whole lot of smart people who are dumb as a box of rocks because they don't apply common sense. So how do we get people to apply common sense? Does it take their kids getting shot up in class? Does it take their sweetheart getting killed in a movie theater? What does it take to move the most Americans in the gun culture, not outside the gun culture, but in the gun culture, to say, yeah, it's about time we did something a little different to protect our rights as gun owners, but also protect the rights of others to live in a society where there are guns?
I think, Michael, I think it's happening.
Again, familiar thing.
Gun owners have got to lead us to the promised land. And I think it's happening. Gun owners have been leaving the NRA consistently for the last 4 to 5 years.
Right.
The NRA, Michael, you will recall, used to be all about instruction and training and responsible bullshit. Now they're all about, it's a militant group. Don't you dare touch my gun. I think you're seeing an alternate pressure come to the NRA, and I think it's really going to come over these next 2 to 3 years, so responsible gun owners can help put this ethic back in the country. But Michael, that guy down in Texas, that 18-year-old, man, there were signs there that this dude had issues. Same with the guy in Buffalo.
Right.
Again, which goes back to red flag laws. But it's not just guns. We need families and communities to report this stuff.
Yeah.
And we're just not doing enough of that.
No, we're not. And I think that's a point that can't be lost on folks, that we have a collective interest in recognizing what that behavior looks like and then being smart enough and engaged enough to report it. You're right. Both of these gentlemen, these 18-year-old boys, were radicalized in a way, one through culture, meaning, you know, believes this racist bullshit out there about Black people.
Yeah.
And the other through, mental health issues that weren't necessarily paid attention to. And again, a failure of both family and friends to recognize that. Brought us to this point where...
Because, Michael, what you're seeing is, especially in the last number of years, these mass shooters are bullies, lonely, outcast young men, and they snap. Yes, the access to guns is a problem, but there's something going on in a lot of young white men where these guys are going off.
Do you think the states should try to take the lead on this again, as we saw David Hogg and his generation of activists did in Florida? Or do you think that I tweeted out that Mitch McConnell should meet with David Hogg. And I think he should. I still don't understand why Republicans are so afraid to engage people that challenge their orthodoxy. If your orthodoxy is all that and a bag of chips, then shit, stand up and defend it. Get in a room with David Hogg and have the conversation like you did, I did, and say, okay, I disagree with that. I can work over here. Let's move into this space. You give a little bit, I give a little bit. But this absolutism that seems to have taken hold where, just ignore it, it'll go away. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to, you know, I mean, even just recently, I was reading something on Red State where they're beating up on McConnell for even having Cornyn go and have the conversation. I'm like, shit. I mean, you're cutting him a new one, and all he said, well, at least go talk to the Democrats and see what they got to say. And these hard ass so-called conservatives, because they're not really, they're just full of bullshit, out here talking all this crap. Because conservatism has never been about not having a damn conversation.
No.
Anyway, I digress.
Look, you've got people like Pat Toomey, Rob Portman, Richard Burr. These guys are retiring.
Yes.
They're leaving the Senate. And they're afraid to go out there and say, this is bull crap. Let's get background checks done. Let's just do that. They're so afraid of their base.
So then we're back where we started the conversation then. How do we, and I guess this is why we're both kind of cynical about the McConnell thing in terms of anything happening, because if I can't get a retiring senator to come out and say, you know what? I've given some thought to this and this is bullshit. We just need to do something. And I'm going to stand with getting background checks, or I'm going to stand with Joe Manchin on a red flag law. If they won't even do that, going out the door when there's no consequence, there are no more fundraisers, there are no more polls you got to worry about. There's no, who are you afraid of? Who the hell are you afraid of when you're quitting the Senate because you found the environment so damn toxic you don't want to stay, that you can't now in that moment ball up and say, all right, this is, I'm going to do me. I'm going to do what I really believe for once in this godforsaken office. And I'm going to stand on the side of the angels here, the little baby angels who were just sent to heaven because some asshole couldn't deal with his mommy or daddy issues and went out and killed them. I'm going to stand with the angels.
Michael, they're still afraid of saying what they really think about Trump on their way out of office.
That's true.
They're still afraid to say what they really think about Trump as they leave the Senate. So look, again, go back to what you said. You are probably right. Nothing will get done, which is why I am hell-bent on working with the David Hogs of the world to empower gun owners these next few years to be a real viable force. That's the only way we're going to see change.
So Joe, what kind of initiatives do you see pulling behind and trying to, through your podcast, and through your other efforts, messaging out to that conservative base that you still have good ties to sort of see a different light? What kind of initiative do you think they would gravitate towards?
I'm going to ask, request, and need your help as part of this over the next few years. Right now, I'm working with some really good people to basically grow an alternative to the NRA. And it's going to take 2 to 3 years. And it's going to be a group of Second Amendment lovers like me who are responsible gun owners who want basic reforms. And I want you to be a part of that process. Sure. But that's these discussions have begun. It's going to take a few years because nothing's going to get done now. But we need that. We need that power. We need that force, that outside force. Or Senate Republicans, who, by the way, Michael, will probably be in the majority after November. They're just not going to act.
Yeah. That's a whole nother conversation. How folks are so fixated on the price of gas and inflation rate that they're willing to give power back to people who, are, at the end of the day, A, will do nothing about either of those two things because, by and large, they can't. And B, tried to overthrow the government in the first instance.
Bingo.
I still don't get, you cannot be that cock-blamed in your brain it's so frustrating to me when I talk to people who sit there and whine about, oh, Joe Biden failed to do this, he failed to do that. I'm like, okay, I can give you some of that, but I'm gonna stick it out with this brother because I'm looking at the crew that's coming up to bat next. That's dangerous. I'm not, that's
Michael,
like,
right,
that literally, right, is like the, once you get the thugs out of your neighborhood,
Yeah.
Because you don't like what the grocery store is selling, you're going to invite them back in to burn up the grocery store.
Hey, Michael Steele, it's a fascinating story. Just 10 years ago, you were the chairman of this party. I was a Tea Party congressman. 10 years later, we are outcasts, public outcasts. It's a fascinating story.
How effed up is that? I don't even understand. So here's another one for you. So to make yours and my plight that much more gnarly. So we tried to help these lame-ass Democrats to figure out how to do politics 101. We're not talking advanced level politics like you and I typically engage in. We're talking about basic shit like, okay, this is how you message. This is your audience. On this issue, how do you... One of my contentions is that from pretty much the beginning, a lot like with the pro-life, pro-choice discussion, we tend to argue on the wrong terms using the wrong language. On the guns, this idea of gun control, the gun control narrative has been used against those who are actually trying to argue for gun safety and gun reforms, right? Because no one wants to be controlled, number one. I mean, it's just, I don't care who you are. In this country, it doesn't matter. Your issue may not be guns, but trust me, if I come to you about controlling some other aspect of your life, you're going to pitch a bitch, right?
Yep.
So the idea of control is an anathema to a significant swath of Americans. How do you see messaging on this issue? How should not just Democrats, but pro-gun safety Americans, strong gun owners maybe like yourself, how do you see messaging on this to begin to cut through the narrative?
Hey, Michael, you're on MSNBC a lot. And oftentimes, man, by the way, damn it, you need a show on MSNBC. like they would listen to me.
Right. Management, pay attention to this brother.
Michael Steele needs a show.
Listen to what he's telling you.
I will go on MSNBC when asked. I love the folks at MSNBC, but the Democrats' problem is every day and every night, they're talking to people who watch MSNBC and tweet.
Right.
Every day, Michael, I hear from working class, low information voters right in the middle.
Right.
Who really don't like either party. They think Republicans are assholes and Democrats are pussies. They tell me that every day. And so even on an issue like guns, it's like they don't talk like regular people talk.
Right.
They talk like you would hear on MSNBC, and it drives just working class stiffs crazy.
So share with us what those working class stiffs say to you about this issue.
Why
don't you replay for us one of your conversations with those folks so we have a better sense now, and it's on a different record that we can hear how that conversation typically goes. I don't think a lot of people get that. A lot of people don't know what that sounds like.
Michael, 2 days ago, I had a conversation with a Latino right in the middle, not affiliated with either party. We were talking about this issue. And I said, what's your problem with the Democrats? I asked him what his problem was with the Republicans. But when I asked him what's wrong with the Democrats, he said, Joe, it's like they want to take shit from me. They want to take my gun, or they want to take this or that. Just let's keep hands out of the guns of criminals. But every time Democrats, Joe, talk about guns, they want to ban this one or ban that ammo or get rid of this. I live in kind of a shitty neighborhood. I like having a gun to protect my family. I'm not an irresponsible jagoff, but so don't say you're coming for my gun. That kind of conversation. And I said, most Democrats don't want to take your guns. Some of the more extreme ones get caught up in that language. He said, well, Joe, why do they talk that way? Now they don't, Michael, you know, they don't all talk that way,
right.
But that's the impression that he had. Is that Democrats were coming for some shit that he had.
So what then would his response be? Or maybe you can sort of paraphrase across the people you've talked to the idea of when he says, you know, don't come for my shit.
Yeah.
All right. That I want, you know, how do you put it? He wants to go after those who don't.
Go after criminals who are using stealing guns.
What does he think that looks like? I asked him, Michael. What does that legislation look like, given what we already have on the books?
So Michael, here's a real low information voter. And I asked him, I said, can you suggest anything? And he said, well, it seems to me we do a pretty shitty job of screening someone. And he doesn't really know a lot about background checks. It seems to me, Joe, we do a lousy job of screening somebody before they get a gun. Boom. Now, there's just a simple low information guy who isolated the problem as he sees it.
Right.
Why don't Democrats go after that?
Well, it's because the NRA won't let them.
And even Michael and Republicans won't either. Right. And that's where Democrats could be on the offensive against Republicans, because Republicans won't even allow background checks. But most freaking working class Americans want it. They want them.
I think in the main, we, to end our conversation, I'm really glad I was able to get you to have this, because by the way,
Michael, you and I should be Democrats, because you and I, we talk like regular freaking people.
Yeah, but you know, I get the idea of jumping out of the frying pan, but that fire is a hell of a lot worse. I think I'll just stay with my sizzle for the moment. Because the rest of this shit's too damn crazy. I'd be honest, you know, if Democrats were a little bit more respectful of my view on life, if they were a little bit more respectful of my view on economy and government, it's worth the conversation, but they ain't ready for prime time. They ain't ready for prime time.
Yeah.
So to sort of end where we began, the idea that something can happen, I think, is a little bit more palpable today than it was 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
The terrain is still fraught with a lot of potholes and pitfalls and obstacles, as we've just alluded to, with Republicans sort of playing a waiting game. But I think in the main, and this is the question, do you think voters go into November with this, along with other issues, in their scorecard of accountability for the people they're going to elect? Or does this just become a one-off by the time we get to November and folks are just really fixated on, you know, inflation sitting at X and gas being Y and a price of, you know, the price for a loaf of bread is Z?
I think it's that, Michael. I think, again, even my low information Latino voter, I asked him what was going to piss him off enough to vote in November. And he said he hates paying what he's paying for gas, and his wife is yelling about what they're paying for groceries. So I still think that's going to rule the day. I think the gun thing is a one-off. You'd know better than I. I do think the Roe v. Wade thing, with women who don't ordinarily vote in a midterm, that could and should help Democrats.
Right. Yeah. I think there's some juice in that. And it's something I know McConnell world is concerned about, which is why they don't want all this other stuff added to sort of cloud the space.
Yeah.
For your low information voter, if I had him in front of me, I would ask him, so tell me this, which do you value more? Low gas prices or access to the ballot box? Which do you value more, a lower inflation rate or the ability to stand in your town square and challenge your government? Because both of those are on the ballot this November.
Completely.
And I'd be curious as to what his answer would be, because my fear is most of them would say, I'd rather have a lower price per gallon, because they believe the other thing won't happen. And I would then say, it did. It's called January 6th. It did. It was called the last 18 months of the Trump administration. where he was desperately seeking people inside his administration to lay the predicate to stop the November elections, because he knew his internal polling showed him in July he was losing. I know that for a fact.
Yeah.
So this is something that, you know, I don't understand how people value their democracy so much less than they value other things, that without the democracy, that shit won't matter. It won't matter when you can't go to the polls and vote the way you want to vote or vote for whomever you want. It doesn't matter what you're paying for gas. It really won't matter.
One of our two major political parties is fully anti-democracy, and yet they will probably take back control of Congress this fall. That's really, really a scary thing. And I guess we haven't done a good enough job of conveying that to the American people.
Yeah, I guess we haven't, because I see in that post-election world, Texas not only being a standard for abortion rights, but Texas becoming a standard for gun rights. When you consider what they did between the two mass shootings in Texas from 2018 to now, they expanded. I mean, 18-year-olds can go get an AR-15. All you have to do is show up and buy. They can't buy liquor. They can't rent a car, but they can go buy an AR-15.
And they need no training.
Michael, they need no training. So, okay, Joe Walsh.
You're the best, Mr. Chairman.
You're the best, my friend. I appreciate you. That does it for this time together, folks. We appreciate it whenever you stop in and spend some time with us here at the Michael Steele Podcast. Don't forget to check out Joe. What's your podcast again, my friend?
White Flag with Joe Walsh.
White Flag with Joe Walsh. Check it out. It's great listening and viewing. Enjoy it. Until next time, folks, be safe, be well, take care. God bless.
America, you asked for it. Or maybe you didn't, but either way, we have to talk. You're just in kind of a crazy place right now, Mr. and Mrs. USA. So, we are going to sit down a couple of times a week and work it out between us. The way Americans do. On a podcast. Hosted by Beowulf Rocklin. Weird name. Weird news. Weird politics. Weird country. Facepalm America. Listen to Facepalm America, a podcast that laughs at America and its politics, from Beowulf Rocklin, producer of The Rick Unger Show. Facepalm America, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and wherever you download your digital distractions in audio form.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.